on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
Weather on Phoenix FM, proudly sponsored by SEHBAC, the award-winning home improvement company for windows, doors, conservatories and extensions.
This evening there will be clear spells and isolated showers, which will give way to a band of rain and strong winds, with the rain turning heavy for a time, especially in the north. Generally, it will become drier towards dawn. Minimum temperature will be 7 degrees Celsius. Tomorrow, we'll see strong winds easing during the morning to leave a fine day with lengthy sunny periods. Temperatures on the mild side with the maximum temperature 11 degrees Celsius. And that's your weather.
Weather on Phoenix FM. Sponsored by SEHBAC, the award-winning home improvement company, proudly serving Essex for over 50 years. Contact us on 0800 666 444 or visit sehbac.com for help with your home.
And welcome to the Arts Programme on Phoenix FM. How is your December going? Is it going well? Natalie, how's yours?
It's going on forever.
If you're already sick of December, this is the place to be. We've got lots of wonderful things in the show today. We're joined by Gareth Barton, an Essex-based artist who's founder of Spread Creative, which is both a brand and design agency by day and art gallery by night. He's joining us to share his story, starting with the gallery in Chelmsford, his work as an artist and his top tips for emerging professionals.
We'll also have some of our favourite albums of 2023 in our top tracks, national news, and of course a roundup of Christmas events. So let's get on with it. I'm Natalie.
And I'm Claire, and this is the Arts Programme on Phoenix FM.
When the world is such a mess, it's hard to feel depressed, getting stressed by what may come in time. But life is much more pleasant when you're living in the present. So let's raise another glass and feel sublime. For come the dawn, our plan might fall to bits when Adolf gets his claws in it. And yes, we broke the law a bit, that's right. But at least until tomorrow, why not believe that we have won and maybe have a little fun? Charlie, let's live it up tonight. So, just for tonight, let's be winners. Who finally did something right? Our plan is signed, sealed, delivered, and tomorrow it could all go wrong. So, Charlie, let's live it up tonight.
What did the sub get hit, or what did they realise that our documents are fake?
Oh, Charlie, why do all this fretting? Read the room, boy, clock the setting. It's no life if you're forgetting to live.
I find it helps me feel prepared.
To what? Just dwell on being scared. I say to hell with that hot air, man, and give yourself some credit where there's credit due. Who made this plan?
I did.
Yes, you. Celebrate your greatness. Grab a gin. You're too full of brains of plenty. Your glass to feel half empty. So let's get another bottle.
Fill the damn thing to the brim.
Just for tonight, be a hero.
I'm not sure that's me.
Who might have beaten the ride?
I'm just a bug boy, you see.
With a fantastical scheme, so just.
But tomorrow it could tumble down.
Exactly. Let's live it up tonight.
5 degrees down, keep 180 feet.
Captain, sir. Canister, sir.
You mean the weather equipment, Lieutenant?
Aye, come on, Captain. Since when did we become underwater postmen?
We have our orders. What was that?
We've registered a depth charge, sir.
Enemy sub incoming.
Change course, Captain.
Captain! It's your moment. Let's embrace it. Victory's so close, we can taste it. And some sweet releases what the people need. Trust me, Charles, there's no point living if we cannot go down swinging. Drop your bombs, we're off to dance until we bleed. Excuse me, I meant to meet my brother here. The great artiste owes me a beer. He's broke, I don't know how his films get made.
With my comrades overseas, I find that money grows on trees. Just sell a secret and you'll see that loose lips will get you paid. Brother, have you got something for me?
Yes, this will make us rich, but it's off the books.
Let's take a look.
What? At the moment, not quite right.
Charlie, my boy, grab each small flash of joy. There's disaster on hoy, but tonight, just for tonight, we're the victors.
My plan was the war.
We'll come to settle a fight.
I'll stop an elf on the
containing 180 feet.
We need to divert. We can't plow into a fight with a sail with some delivery job.
We don't have a choice.
Sir!
We're under direct orders. Head straight to Spain and surface.
Surface? What the hell is going on?
The best, there's no defeating us. Fight our charisma and our genius. Right. So drink up, let's get delirious. Oh, hey, me, hey, boy. And tonight, tomorrow we could die, but right now, now we're celebrating, taking a bow. So raise your glass and shout it out loud. Just for tonight, we are.
These are the strangest weather equipment I've ever seen.
And we're just supposed to leave him out there.
Those are our instructions.
Do we even know his name?
Ready to give the order, sir?
Aye. Float him out. Close the main access hatch and then we'll dive. Thank you for your service, son.
If it's down, it's down together. If it's up, it's up as one. So sail on, boys, through stormy weather. Soon the journey will be done. If it's down, it's down together.
Tell me about Operation Mincemeat, Natalie.
So Charlotte tells me Operation Mincemeat is one of the top musicals in the UK at the moment.
Ah, right,
so,
okay.
That was called Just For Tonight, from the West End cast recording of Operation Mincemeat. So after a successful off-West End run, Operation Mincemeat opened at the Fortune Theatre March of this year. The transfer to the Fortune Theatre in London received 64 five-star reviews.
Wow.
Making it the best-reviewed show in West End history, with tickets selling out most nights. The musical tells the story of a bizarre World War II plot of a corpse of a fake British pilot that was floated onto a Spanish shore to fool Hitler into moving his troops out of Sicily. So it's a musical about the Second World War.
I've heard of Operation Mincemeat as a name before. Is that a real story?
I have no idea.
Or is that...
I hope so. And
I think it was a real story.
When it was happening, they were all singing at the same time.
I'm checking it out. I think it was a real story. It was a successful British deception operation and disguised the 1943 Allied invasion of Sicily. So
it's a true story.
Yeah, I was thinking, I recognise this. So yeah, it was two members of the British intelligence obtained the body of Glyndwr Michael, a tramp, who died from eating rat poison, dressed him as an officer of the Royal Marines, and placed personal items on him, identifying him as the fictitious Captain William Martin. Correspondence between the two generals suggested that the Allies planned to invade Greece and Sardinia, with Sicily as merely the target of the feint, which was also placed on the body. So it was... I'm sure there's a film called Operation Mincemeat as well. I'm pretty sure there is. But yes,
only know musicals in my brain.
So yes, it absolutely was. So they've made it into a musical.
And a very popular one.
And a very popular one.
With rave reviews. So if you're looking to get people some theatre tickets for Christmas, maybe that's the one you want to take them to.
Nice. And obviously find out more about Operation Mincemeat, because it was a real operation.
It is not fictitious.
Not fictitious at all.
Anyway, Claire, what have you been doing this week?
What have I been doing this week? Well, a couple of things. So in reverse order, yesterday I went to the Illustrators' Fair in King's Cross, which was over in University of the Arts London, in their kind of big space at Granary Square.
It's lovely
so
over there.
It's really nice. So we took an opportunity to have a little walk from Farringdon. So, you know, how nice is it to get the Queen Elizabeth Line straight to Farringdon and then just
go for a walk
around London. Yeah. And so did our little walk down to King's Cross. So we went to the Exmouth Market, which is
Coldrop's Yard.
Yes, we did, but not for very long because we were aiming for this Illustrators Market. But we hung out quite a bit on Exmouth Market along on the way in Farringdon, which I used to work when I worked at the Arts Council. We had our offices up there, so it was kind of a bit of a trip down memory lane for me. So that was really nice. Had the best bowl of Poe soup ever. It was so nice. But yeah, the Illustrators Market was lovely. It was probably, I don't know, maybe about 80 to 100 stalls, maybe. There might have been even more than that. It was quite busy. And, you know, there's a lot. Interesting, as an illustrator's market, what I could say is that I would say 60 to 65% of what I saw was aimed at children's illustration. So kind of really quite strongly around stickers, book illustration, those kind of things. Mix of illustrative styles, but very focused on children's illustration. And what I hope that, and I didn't look this up before I came out, but what I hope is that there's a relationship between UAL and the Illustrators Fair, and you know, lots of students having the opportunity to go.
Definitely in. Hope so. You'd hope that there is, and they're not just charging premium prices for illustrators to turn up.
You'd hope, but there were illustrators from across the UK. You know, there were lots of people that came down. There's a few people that I follow on Instagram that I got to say hello to. And then one of the other things I noted, and I don't know if you've noticed this across social media and sort of just seeing things in shops and designs and stuff, but mushrooms are everywhere.
Yeah, very big.
It's been a big foraging thing this year, I think, and the kind of the illustration of mushrooms is it popping up all over the place. No joke intended, but there was quite a lot of mushrooms at the Illustrator Fair.
It was mushroom for the mushrooms.
Yes, mush love at Christmas and all that kind of stuff, and Christmas decorations.
Cheers to a fungi at Christmas.
All that. But yes, I bought a couple of things. It's always nice to buy your Christmas presents from artists. So got the chance to buy a few nice little things for presents and stuff. So yeah, so that was really lovely. And you know, we'll hear in the news later on that the Design Festival is not going to happen next year. So it's kind of, you know, how these fairs work, the commercial model of these fairs is really difficult, really difficult to run, to make enough money to put all the infrastructure in. But doing something like UAL, who's got that, if you haven't been, they've got just at Granary Square, you kind of go into the main building and they've got this quite big atrium space which they can use for different events.
So the fair was inside rather than outside.
Yeah, so it was covered.
Yes,
yeah, it was inside, but it's still quite open to the elements. It's got quite big doors either end that are open quite a lot. There was also a really nice food market going on there and a covered Christmas market. So, you know what? Even though the Illustrators Fair is not there, it's worth going to Cold Drop Yard. It's worth going because there's a really nice food market and closed-in market, Christmas market. So have a look at getting on the train and going up to London because it's so easy.
I think they do a variety of Christmas markets there as well, don't
they? Yeah, they do.
We went to a Mexican one last year. That was really cool. We bought loads of Mexican gifts.
Yes, nice. So that was good. And then on Wednesday, as part of... So I'm one of the partners in Ignite Chelmsford, which is the group of creative people... Across the whole of the district, and there's a group of partners that kind of help amplify the voice of the creative network, and we all met up as a partnership group, and some of us are new, some of us have been around for a while, but we've just done some recruitment, so it was kind of a new group. We've got a new chair now, and co-chairs. So we all went to Colchester on Wednesday night, and we went to Colchester Makerspace, which Mark Diaf, who works at Chelmsford City Council, and I work quite closely with him through the Culture Trust, he was the founder of the Colchester Makerspace, and it's absolutely brilliant. It's so nice. So, you know, makerspaces happen all over the UK, and London has its fair share of makerspaces, but we don't have that many in Essex. And they did a piece of research first to find out what it was that would work well in Colchester. So what are the kind of key needs and key bits of equipment and things that people find difficult to buy themselves as makers?
Yeah.
And the two things that they came up with in Colchester was both the kind of the pottery and the need to buy kilns and, you know, wheels and that kind of stuff, and then also printmaking. So the Colchester Makerspace is pottery and printmaking.
Yeah.
So it's a membership fee, you pay once a month, and I think there's kind of student rates at about £10, and it's sort of £15 for other members, and it gives you, I think, £15.
That's really reasonable, actually.
It's really reasonable, really, really reasonable. It's in a building that's owned by an architect called Hat Architects, and they kind of do quite a lot of that sort of social investment. And so if you're paying £15 a month, and you get 8 hours in the studio, but of course... You know, you don't have to buy any of the equipment yourself. You can just use all that space there. You've got this network of other makers around you that you know, it's very sociable. It's very supportive. They also run courses at Colchester Makerspace. So if you didn't want to go and join and be a member, you could go and do one of their courses there. But it was just great. You know, it was so nice to be able to go and have access to wheels and to... We all threw pots and we all kind of had a go at the clay pot building, coil pots and also throwing. So, but now I kind of want to go and have a go at printmaking and doing some more things. And I was just like, do you know what? We need to bring this to Chelmsford. It's too far for me to go every week to Colchester. I want this in Chelmsford. I want this at the road. Is.
And there isn't anything the other way either towards London.
You've either got to go to Hackney or Tower Hamlets, or you've got to go into kind of Waltham Foresty area or Black Horse Road Studios, those kind of places. So either way, you've got quite a distance to go. So I think we need something that can kind of occupy that space for Brentwood, Chelmsford, kind of Basildon, Billericay, those kind of that kind of area. Yeah. So anyway, so that's my, I'm now on a mission.
Okay.
Find out how to bring a makerspace to Chelmsford. You watch this space. How has your? I mean, you are absolutely exhausted, aren't you? Because Christmas is your one of your busiest
Christmas
times of year.
Over already. And
you've got your Christmas shirt on, though.
I do. This is the only thing that is keeping me Christmassy, because on my face there definitely isn't Christmas, but on all of my clothes there are.
You have doubled up on your outfit today.
Yes,
I'm very impressed.
I've got a Christmas cats t-shirt and Christmas trees on my jumper.
Nice.
But yeah, I mean, it's been full on. So last week...
Do you have a box at home with just all your Christmas outfits in it?
I have a drawer. Some of the Christmas outfits go in the loft with the Christmas decorations. So I have a sexy Santa outfit that I wear once a year.
I don't think we want to know about that.
Literally once a year.
But I'm really impressed that you have so many Christmas... I've got one Christmas jumper and I haven't even got it on today, which is appalling behaviour.
I did get a lot of my Christmas jumpers last year. I went on a bit of a...
This one's really nice, though. I like this one. This is cats with various different Christmas lights and decorations and things on them. This is very nice. I'm approving of that one. Anyway, what have you been up to? All the Christmas stuff.
So I went to two Christmas parties last week. So one was the Yay Mates Christmas party at Brentwood Theatre. That was
Which
very
I
nice.
Couldn't go to because I had to go to the Makerspace thing.
Yeah,
sorry.
I mean, we didn't throw any pots, but we did play some hilarious games.
Nice.
Dicing with Life. And we also heard a lovely talk by Nicola from Blue Seraph about social media efficiencies. And actually, I feel like it's the talk that I needed to hear on the basis of, she was saying, get a plan, don't do too much content, just reuse the content that you have over and over again, and you'll get the same kind of engagement. And that was wicked, because you know, you're always trying to think of new things to say all the time for your stories and your Insta posts and your Facebook. But actually, she's saying just use one bit of content, reshare, the engagement will still be good. So
yeah,
I wanted to hear that.
Nice.
About efficiencies.
That's good.
So that was the Yay Mates Christmas party. There was also the Kaleidoscope Christmas party. There was fancy dress there, so that was all I needed.
That was all you needed.
Fancy dress and snacks. It was amazing. So that was Tuesday night. I finished painting the sleigh that I mentioned last week. So that is now at the Mercury.
Hurrah.
In front of Santa. I had a lovely picture taken with Santa in the sleigh as well.
Nice.
So if you're friends with me on Facebook, find that. It is now my profile picture to reiterate the vibe that I am Christmassy, because I have to be. And then
forced to apply. Honestly, you should see Natalie's face. She's like, everything from the neck downward says Christmas, and everything from the neck upward says I want to go to bed and wait until January.
I just want to hibernate. What else? And then it was Charlotte's birthday last week, so we went to the V&A Museum.
Oh, nice.
And we went to a talk from the illustration and print department about Christmas cards.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah, mainly Victorian Christmas cards. So there was lots of info on cats in Christmas cards, cats riding bicycles, bunnies playing table tennis.
Nice.
And some of the first Christmas cards, which actually weren't Christmassy at all, one of them, they showed just a couple of bugs and a quote from the Bible, which, very bizarre. So, yeah, that was great. And then... I was at a Christmas fair yesterday. We had Snow's stocking filler fair yesterday, so they're selling Christmas cards there. Went into central London after to look after the niece. And on Friday night I went to the I Am Film Festival.
That sounded good.
Yes, that was featuring a documentary by Kelly Maloney aka Frank Maloney, who was the infamous boxing promoter of Lennox Lewis.
Yeah.
So this was a really raw autobiographical film about her transition from man to woman. And she was there and she kind of spoke a little bit about her story. Yeah, and it was really quite dark to watch, but really wholesome towards the end, about how her community had really supported her, how her family had really supported her through the transition, mm-hmm. and kind of the highs and the lows of that journey as well. So yeah, lots and lots of stuff,
lots going on, and then lots going on next weekend as well, because we are getting ready for our own Panto next weekend. But in the meantime, let's go and find our guest who's waiting outside, and let's get some music on. So this is the new one from Cher, who appeared on the Graham Norton Show live and everybody went mad.
Oh yeah, I watched that actually.
Yes,
it was great.
So this is Cher with DJ Play Christmas Song.
At Active Signs and Designs Limited, our team are passionate about getting you noticed. First impressions are everything. So if you're driving a commercial vehicle, how are people seeing you? Our vehicle graphic products and well-designed signage can make you stand out from the crowd. Give the team a call on 01708 343 555 or visit us at activesignsanddesigns.co.uk and start getting your business noticed today.
This little cottage came to market
This stylish flat made a home. This country house had hundreds of steps, whilst this bungalow had none. And this little semi said, me, 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 make me your home.
Whatever your property requirements, Beresford's have it covered. To book your free valuation, pop into one of our 17 branches across Essex and into Greater London, or visit beresfords.co.uk.
Need a will? Facing redundancy or an employment issue? Searching for some family legal advice? Seeking legal guidance for your commercial business? Or maybe you are moving property and are looking for an excellent conveyancer? Whatever the legal service, for life, business and everything in between, Pinny Telford Solicitors have it covered. Find out more online at www.pinnytelford.co.uk or call our Brentwood office on 01277 211 755 to book an appointment.
Phoenix FM.
Was that a prelude?
It was a pre. Do you know, every week I'm doing a sneak preview of the next track. And it's nothing to do with the fact that I don't push the dials up quick enough. But that that was Lisa Hannigan with Snow. And before that, we heard Cher's new one, DJ Play a Christmas Song. I think we could all sing along to that one.
Is that number one at the moment?
I'm
sure I read something in the news saying that she's the only artist who's had a number one in 7 decades or so. That might be an exaggeration. I don't know how long she's been around.
She's been around for a long time.
5 decades?
Well, she's about 80, isn't she?
I don't know how old she is.
We'll debate that later.
It's quite difficult to tell.
It is quite difficult to tell because there's not a lot of her that's probably the same as there was 80 years ago, if you see what I mean. Anyway, we're now joined us. We've got some scratchiness on the FM today, so it's a bit difficult, isn't it? We might turn that off in a second. But we have got, joining us in the studio, we've got Gareth. Hello, Gareth.
Hi.
Hello. Thank you for being here on a Sunday afternoon.
How lovely.
In our Christmassy studio. You bought us biscuits.
Well, I thought, you know, dark chocolate and stem ginger.
That's just perfect. Perfect for Christmas, and also perfect.
Munching while
perfect
on the radio
guest.
Is probably not ideal, right?
Yes, but, you know, we've got time. We've got tracks. We've got 8-minute track from
Can
you.
We not do some
we've
sort
got
of
time.
ASMR sort of thing with just the three of us crunching away on biscuits.
That would be lovely. I don't know if our listeners would drop off at that point, but for us, it would
if
be lovely.
Not gluten free. I'm into that. Yeah,
they're definitely not gluten free. So, you know, all the fun for you, Natalie, who lives in a gluten free household. Poor thing. But anyway, Gareth, thank you for joining us today. You are a number of things in your life, but we know you as having been the founder of Spread Creative, but you're also an artist in your own right. And you have this creative studio, which you've kind of run as a studio practice by day, and then by night you turn it into an art gallery. That's my kind of magical, slightly panto image of you.
What character do I play in that?
Any character.
Anyone
the
you like.
Or something.
I don't know. I think you're the kind of
one. I have done panto before.
Have you?
For many years.
What did you do?
Well, I was in Chelmsford doing panto, and I played baddie.
Did you?
For many years. No, I played the dame 1 year.
I can't see
but
you being a baddie.
Yeah.
It's a shame we didn't know this a couple of weeks ago. You could
You've
have been
our evil queen.
You've
got the beard for it. You've got baddies have beards.
The last time I shaved my beard off, the only time I've shaved my beard off in the last probably 30 years was for playing the dame.
Oh, right,
so
okay.
I just thought that was a step too far.
Oh, did you not like playing the dame?
No, I love the makeup.
Yeah.
And
you just didn't like not having a beard.
Yeah, it was a bit odd.
That was it.
I think you could have just dyed the beard instead. I mean, I've seen dames with beards and they just kind of dye them pink or, you know.
I went proper method.
Did you?
I actually shopped for a bra, which was really interesting. Had to go and get measured and fitted.
Nice, yeah. Nice. Rigby Impeller.
The budget didn't quite stretch.
Maybe not,
for
maybe
that, but
not.
I did turn out I was a 40 double D, which, I mean, who knew?
Who knew? Well, now you do. Yeah. I mean, and obviously you'll hold that one with you for life now, that you always know your bra size. It's important to know that. But we're not going to talk about panto with you, and we can, but we want to know a little bit more about... first of all, let's talk about where we are now, and then we'll go backwards a bit, because at the moment you've got an exhibition on, so we're going to talk about the exhibition. Which is Marsha Roddy with Bleeding Hearts, and that's on until the 14th, so people have got a little bit longer to get down to Chelmsford and go see it. But I'm going to park that for a second, because I want to get back to the beginning.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yes. I'm going to take you back to the beginning, because I really want to understand how you got here. So you are a founder of a design practice, you're running an art gallery, you've run a charity, you've done lots of things in your lifetime. But like, let's go back to how this all started. So you went to Portsmouth College of Art and Design, but to get to that point, what was your childhood like? Because we really like to understand the person behind these kind of creative industries jobs, and because
we're going deep, aren't we?
We're going deep. We're going deep, Gareth. So we really
3, 2, 1.
We really want to know what inspired you as a child to go on this kind of creative journey that you've been on.
Okay. Well, if we're going to get proper deep,
yeah.
Then I heard this story recently about. Self-worth.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a story from psychologists, and they talk about a young child coming home from nursery, maybe something very, very early years, and they have a painting that they have, and the parent welcomes them probably on the kitchen floor, maybe, you know, and says, "Let me have a look at that painting. Wow, that's amazing. You're so talented. oh, gosh, I'm so proud of you. We're going to stick that up on the fridge so that everyone can see just how wonderful you are.
Mm-hmm.
And gives them a big hug and, you know. And you think, wow, what a lovely story. The psychologist goes on to suggest, what would it be like if the child came home and the parent took the painting and said, let's just put that aside for the moment. I'm so proud of you. I love you so much. I've heard such great things from your teachers about how you interact with the other people and the way you represent yourself and our family at nursery. And I just want to let you know that you are completely lucky. Now, let's have a look at that painting, shall we?
Mm-hmm.
And I think I grew up in a situation that felt more like the first.
Mm-hmm.
That my self-worth was always attached to what I was able to produce.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always good at drawing as a kid, always. And so there's that sense of growing up with that kind of real deep sense of, if I can draw well, if I can do this well, then maybe I'll be good. Mm-hmm. I'll be loved or whatever.
I think that's quite, I mean, I think a lot of people would resonate with that, wouldn't they? The kind of idea of being praised for something that you've done, because you feel like you the praise is genuine, and it feels like that it's, you know, it is something that you've put your heart and soul into and produced. But I can see that there's the nuance of difference between praising you as a person and what you represent and who you are, as opposed to just the output of something that you've done, is a sort of different form of investing in self-worth.
And it, I mean, even now, I'm 55 now, and even now, every time I go to put a mark on a piece of paper, there's a jeopardy. Someone asked me recently about what do I do when I'm just drawing for fun, and it really took me by surprise, the question, because I realized I don't think I do draw for fun. It's just too much at stake.
Yeah,
because if it's great, then, you know, people will look at me and say, what, you did that?
Yeah.
Then, therefore, you must be X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
But if it's bad, you know, that's shameful. You know, there's a kind of, you know, anyway, we talked about going deep, but that's where I'm at. But then as I went on with my childhood, it was kind of, I mean, you know, two parents and me and a younger sister. I was born in Kingston in Surrey, and then we moved to Bristol very early on because my father was an engineer, big engineering city. And in many ways, you know, quite a happy childhood, except my mum was diagnosed with breast cancer when she was 34. So I think I was 11 or 12. It's a really kind of formative time. And a lot of the attention in the household shifted, obviously, to her well-being at a time when I was really, you know, developing and growing. So that was tough.
Yeah.
Really tough.
And tough for children to understand that as well, isn't it? It's kind of tough to see your... Because at that point in your life, you think your parents are infallible, don't you? You don't think that anything's going to happen to them. Mm. So there's all sorts of things that come out of that.
And I think probably drawing and playing vinyl and things like that, hiding myself away, was probably a place to retreat to.
Yeah.
And
then that took your journey of creativity then. Were your parents creative? Because obviously engineers are creative people. So did your parents sort of...
No, not particularly. My dad was, you know, kind of more like a precision grinder. So he worked on parts for Concorde and things like that. And mum was a genius with money. She was a clerk and always thrived wherever she went, you know, did really, really well. But I, you know, academically, things didn't go particularly well for me at that time. And I came out of school with next to nothing, other than an ability to draw. And particularly to copy, to duplicate.
Mm-hmm.
So I would, one of my O-level pieces, back when O-levels were a thing, was a copy of the cover of Black Sabbath album.
Oh, right. Yeah. Nice.
And
which one? Paranoia? Or?
No, Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath.
Okay, nice.
and I did a sketch with Olivia Newton-John and stuff like that. So, but they were all kind of highly technical. So yeah. I then kind of applied quite late to go to do an art course. So I was going to do graphic design, but I think the course was full. But they said actually technical illustration might be your thing because of the technical, you know, skills that you have. So I went to Brunel Technical College in Bristol for 2 years and did technical illustration. And back then, that was when, you know, it was like the Haynes manual for cars or whatever. But I was doing these incredible hand-drawn pen and ink.
Yeah, everything hand-drawn.
You know, full 3D. So yeah. I had a whole booklet full of ellipse guides, you know, that opened up it's getting into technical stuff. But, you know, as you look down a cylinder, the ellipses open up more towards a circle at the end. Anyway.
It's such a skill, though, isn't it?
A real artisan skill.
Learning how to do that yeah. by hand, as opposed to now, which is...
At the time when computers...
Yeah.
So by the time that I did 2 years there, and then I went to Portsmouth for a year, and they were focused much more on kind of multimedia and, you know, graphics and stuff, because it's Portsmouth not being quite such the engineering powerhouse that Bristol was. Obviously, Portsmouth being more of a Navy kind of base. And I came away with that at a time when all the work that I'd learned to do by hand had been made completely and utterly redundant by the emergence of computer-aided design.
Yeah.
And so I kind of, from there, there's nothing to be proud of particularly. I squirted my way through. I mean, I managed to get a job working for a retail giant down there, a DIY chain, and I would illustrate their signage and their marketing stuff.
Yeah.
And then from there, I got into commercial office interiors. And that was fun, you know, working for furniture manufacturers, but I would be able to sit in front of the client and I'd be able to sketch
what it's going to look like.
Yeah. And they would love that.
Yeah.
And so I was able to continue using those kind of skills, but in a much more commercial environment. I did that for 15 years. And then at the time, I was volunteering for a charity that worked with people in prison. And 9/11 happened, and the whole kind of commercial market just took a dive, really. Confidence in the market just dropped out. A lot of big contracts got cancelled, and so company I was working for did some redundancies, and by then I'd had enough of that. And I was living in West London at the time. I'd moved to Ealing from Bristol. And so I took that redundancy and joined the charity and worked with volunteers across London, the South East, in different prisons, doing amazing programs of restorative justice and introducing victims of crime to offenders and seeing extraordinary things happen. Amazing.
That's programs. Such a change, though, isn't it? Going from, I mean, obviously you were
one
a volunteer.
One set of interiors to another set of interiors.
Well, yes, very different interior. But just such a different headspace as well to kind of go from working in that commercial world to clients to then thinking about restorative justice and thinking about changing people's lives. And, you know, that must have given you a whole new outlook on everything.
Yeah.
Is it a case of job satisfaction or life satisfaction, do you think you were looking for?
I wish I could say, Natalie, that I had some sense of, you know, heroic altruism or entrepreneurism. But I was on my knees in my previous job, and this opportunity came up, and I took it. And it was a huge cut in salary, you know, at a time when I had small children. And I was offered an opportunity to become a director of the charity. So I moved from West London, where we were based, to Essex, and had another child, and at the same time was made redundant in pretty difficult circumstances. So that was fun, you know, brand new baby and new house and... Mm.
And moving to a new location as well.
Away from all your support networks. Exactly. And that was pretty tough. And I spent a year actually... Gosh, this really is full disclosure on a first date, isn't it? Thanks for that.
Sorry.
So I spent a year spiralling, actually. Real crisis of confidence. And then decided I wanted to go back into the creative fields. and found a client in bizarre circumstances, found a client and started to work for them and started to look at all of their graphic design, all of their messaging, writing. So, I mean, pretty much everything I'd done in the creative fields and actually everything I'd done at the charity kind of came to bear, because this client was a charity. So I had understanding of how boards work. I'd seen a board behave incredibly badly, and now I was able to advise on board ethics and board kind of behaviours. And at the same time, bring all of my marketing skills, all of my writing skills, my drawing skills, my photography skills that I developed over the years. And so I brought all of that to bear on this one client. And from there, managed to scrape myself back into some sort of shape over the course of a number of years. I still work with that client now, 15 years later.
Wow. I mean, one of the reasons why I'm asking you all these questions is because it struck me that somebody who has taken these big twists and turns in their careers has managed to establish some kind of resilience or some kind of way of bouncing back at different points and rethinking what their skills are. And I think that's so, it's just so relevant for where we all are now, because, you know, we've come through COVID, we've come out the side of that, we're in economically challenging times. And some of us, again, are thinking about, you know, whether there's redundancies in the off in the pipeline, or whether there's just thinking about actually how do I change things up and do something different. And that kind of learning from, you know, what you've just talked about, which was the skills that you learned through doing those different kind of roles, that you could then bring them back in different circumstances. I think that that picture that you're painting will resonate with quite a few people. But also, I think it's really good to kind of just have a few of those stories of how to do it and how to be successful and what those kind of pivoting moments look like. And a lot of what we do on the arts program is about sharing how people pivot, sharing how people kind of make good out of really challenging and difficult situations. And we've been doing quite a lot of that since
COVID.
Those
creative changes are as well. Yeah. Because as a creative, you do have a lot of different jobs, a lot of different skills that you can bring together in different ways.
And nobody's journey is linear. You know, that's the other thing that we've learned a lot about through all the people that we've interviewed, is that these journeys are not linear. They move in all sorts of different rambling ways. And that's the kind of joy of it. But it's also the kind of reassurance to our listeners and to people who might be interested in entering the creative industries, that it's okay to do that kind of slightly more, you know, roundabout journey to get where you want to be.
I mean, I'll say this. I don't know that I've fully understood it, and I don't know that I ever will. But I wouldn't change where I'm at now. I'm so grateful for where I'm at. I'm not driven by financial goals. I think probably some of the work that I did in prison, you know, that driven by, I guess the thing that really drives me is to be moved. I want to be deeply moved. And I have understood in my life what it's like to feel gut-wrenching fear, great highs, terrible lows, to walk with someone through terrible cancer diagnosis and eventually brain tumour and passing, and to be present when someone passes away that you've loved so much, to go through the redundancy, to have the uncertainty, to the charity I started working with works in post-conflict zones around the world. So I've travelled over the last 15 years into some of the most challenging situations. Spent time with survivors of genocide, survivors of Taliban suicide bombings, people who've lost loved ones through earthquake, and, you know, and I've cried and wept with people and shared their stories and photographed them, and brought all of my creative skills to bear to tell their stories in a way that would really resonate. And I guess that, somewhere or other, that resonates throughout me. I mean, although I wouldn't change at all where I'm at today and how that's beginning to shape the creative agency, the gallery, and, you know, my personal practice, I wouldn't have chosen the path it took to get here.
Yeah. Which is, that's kind of fair enough, isn't it? When you look back, you kind of think, actually, some of those things you could have.
And for most of my life, I feel like I've What's that lovely Doctor Who quote? That was from a Christmas special, which was like, hold on tight and pretend it's a plan.
Yeah.
Right? And that, I do feel like I've been some sort of spectator in my own stories. It's been, you know, and I guess now I'm beginning to feel finally that I'm beginning to start shaping that.
Yeah.
And feel like I've got some, I ought to be careful saying this out loud, shouldn't I? Some sort of control.
Yeah, I mean,
and I'm beginning to bring together some of those ideas and thoughts and then start to use them in my own practice. But it's certainly that desire to feel something.
Yeah, that drives you.
Just to be moved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I go and see, you know, whether it's any of the art, and it's the arts, really, it's the mm-hmm. arts and people. You know, if those two things together, I want to be deeply moved by the work that I see, the work I engage with, the clients that we work with, the people I'm around.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I guess someone would probably be able to look back and make sense of why that's such a vital thing for me today.
Well, let's ask you why you're deeply moved by Radiohead, because we're going to play your first track, your first suggestion, which is the national anthem. So where does Radiohead fit into that?
Oh, gosh. Well, I mean, you know, it probably does take me right back to when I was in my bedroom playing my vinyl, sort of some bits of vinyl I played, you know, from one side through to the other. And I've always had this love of kind of melancholy, you know, darkness or whatever, you know, I think probably it first emerged with something like the Smiths or something like that. But the thing I like about the National Anthem is it's one of those things, and this is, I was talking to someone the other day about looking around a gallery and seeing art with a very different perspective. I was at the National Portrait Gallery, in fact, it was on Friday. And saying, forget what you think you like or don't like, just walk around and just allow yourself to be captivated by something, mm-hmm. to be caught by surprise by something, and then try and figure out why.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Radiohead often does that for me, and there's something about the National Anthem that and we'll talk about the comet is coming, particularly the second track. This I've loved Radiohead for the longest time, and for years I was like, OK Computer is the best album, and then I fell in love with the Bends, and I was like, no, the Bends is the best album. And then someone told me that Kid A was considered to be the best album. I was like, come on, there's no way that you could surpass the Bends, then OK Computer, with something else. And then I reluctantly listened to Kid A. In fact, I was bought it for a Christmas present, coming back to this time of year. And I played it, and I was like, oh my goodness. And the National Anthem. And then watching them do Glastonbury on the TV, and they played it. And it just, whatever it is you're doing, it will just arrest you. And there is something about, particularly the brass on this kind of modern jazz influence. It has this driving rhythm and beat that carries the track all the way through. But there is this chaos, this riot of brass
mm-hmm.
that sometimes on first hearing is difficult to get your head around. But then it gets under your skin, and it just, I keep coming back to it. It's a track that you have to keep coming back to time and time and time again. It keeps rewarding me. It keeps giving me something new. And that's what I look for when I'm looking at art.
Yeah. Well, we're going to give it a listen. And you had the best praise from my 17-year-old daughter, who said, I said, I'm playing the National Anthem today. And she said, Kid A. And I went, yeah. And she went, good choice.
Nice. I'll take that.
immerse yourself.